This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Tuesday, August 29th. I'm Jeff Bossert. Coming up, the Great Lakes Radio Consortium's Julie Grant will talk about the safety of flood walls when you build along a floodplain. And a look at your AM 580 weather forecast for Champaign-Urbana. But first, today's news. For the second time in 6 months, an electrical problem involving instrumentation at Exelon's Clinton Nuclear Power Plant has caused the plant to automatically shut down. AM 580's Jim Meadows reports.
Clinton plant spokesman Bruce Paulson says the shutdown occurred Sunday shortly after 5 p.m. He says a power supply for the plant's instrumentation malfunctioned and caused the water level in the nuclear reactor to rise, triggering the automatic shutdown.
All the system components responded accordingly, and there was no danger to either the public or the employees. And we are investigating why all this happened, and we're making the necessary repairs. And after all that is done, we'll be bringing the plant back online.
Paulson says he doesn't know when the Clinton plant will be ready to start providing power again. The last time the Clinton nuclear power plant went on automatic shutdown was in March. In that case, the plant shut down for a couple of days due to a problem with a faulty wire that affected plant instrumentation. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
A Taylor University student, misidentified for weeks as a classmate killed in a traffic accident, is headed back to class today for the first time since the mistake was discovered. 19-year-old Whitney Sirach of Gaylord, Michigan, was identified as among the five people killed in the April 26th highway crash. Fellow student Laura Van Ryn was incorrectly thought to have survived the wreck. It took a month for family and friends who thought they had been caring for the 22-year-old Van Ryn to realize they had the wrong person. Sirach is expected to join her classmates on the first day of classes today on the northeastern Indiana campus. It will be illegal to drag a couch or easy chair out to the porch of an Urbana home if an ordinance to ban the practice passes the Urbana City Council. Council members voted 4-3 last night to give initial approval to a ban on the outdoor use of indoor upholstered furniture at a committee of the whole meeting. The final vote is expected in 2 weeks. Opponents of the ban focused on allowing the furniture on porches. They see porches as an extension of the house and argue that residents should be able to put what they want on them. But Alderwoman Lynn Barnes says it's reasonable to keep indoor furniture inside the house and not on the porch.
I think that there's many things that we regulate and in certain ways take away certain freedoms. I mean, we have an ordinance that doesn't allow our grass to grow any more than 8 inches. You know, certainly grass that's 9 inches probably isn't a safety hazard, but as grass gets taller, it's a visual problem and an aesthetics problem. So I think this is pretty consistent with that, and I think wet upholstered furniture certainly can attract vermin.
The proposal specifically bans upholstered furniture meant for indoor use. Other indoor furniture would be permitted outside in Urbana. Besides porches, the furniture would also be banned from yards and rooftops. Violators would be fined. The state of Illinois is paying more than $1 million to settle a long-running dispute with a public employees union. Sean Crawford has details.
The union, known as AFSCME, accused the state of violating its labor contract by hiring outside firms to handle various duties, from clerical to technical jobs. While the complaint dates back to the mid-90s, the administration of current Governor Rod Blagojevich has agreed to a financial payout. About 36 people will split more than $600,000. AFSCME's Anders Lindahl.
These 36 individuals were laid off or took a voluntary reduction in pay as a result of a position being eliminated and the work subsequently contracted out.
The union will get another $500,000 to make up for lost dues it would have collected. Lindahl says AFSCME is pleased with the decision, but it's unclear how it could impact Blagojevich's relationship with the union. The administration and AFSCME have battled in recent months on matters ranging from prison staffing to mandatory overtime. The union withheld an endorsement for Blagojevich in the March primary. I'm Sean Crawford.
A federal judge on Monday ended a dispute about whether the Democratic Illinois Attorney General would represent the Democratic governor in a hiring lawsuit. Judge Gene Scott ruled that the State Department of Transportation had no basis for complaining that Attorney General Lisa Madigan's office couldn't fairly represent the agency. IDOT faces a lawsuit from 17 former employees claiming they were fired and replaced by people loyal to Governor Rod Blagojevich. Scott's ruling means that the plaintiffs will be able to question Mary Lee Leahy about what the prominent labor attorney told IDOT when she was on contract to Blagojevich early in 2003. IDOT had wanted Leahy gagged under rules that make legal advice private. Scott agreed the decision is up to Madigan's office. Madigan says Leahy was a consultant, not a lawyer. For the latest newscast online, go to wiol.uiuc.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Jeff Bosser. Many people are drawn to live near rivers, lakes, and other bodies of water. That means they have to take special care in case of floods, but flood walls and levees don't always protect them. In one town, residents are asking why the wall separating their backyards from the neighboring river didn't hold back the water. The GLRC's Julie Grant reports on the safety of flood walls and building in a floodplain.
Dale and Donna Smerdell bought a condominium along a river just a few months ago. This summer, they've been sitting in the backyard on a wall overlooking the river and watching the sunset. But now that concrete wall is broken and falling away from the bank. It's crumbled in some spots and held together only by twisted rebar.
This is where the largest portion simply fell away because of the water. It was a torrent. It was so strong, it picked up a camper and flung it over this wall because the water was so high above the wall that it was like a toy. It just floated away like a toy.
People on rafts rescued everyone from second floor windows. Donna Smerdell says they thought this wall would protect them from flooding.
I don't think there was a single person here that believed that this was not going to keep us safe. I think we all believed that even if the water did rise, that it wouldn't hurt the retaining wall. None of us are engineers. We looked at it. It looked safe. We believe we were safe. We had no idea. We just had no idea.
This story is not uncommon. Last year, people in New Orleans expected a flood wall to protect them from rising waters brought on by Hurricane Katrina. People along the Mississippi River expected levees and flood walls to protect them from the great floods of '93. Many flood walls hold, but when they don't, the people who thought they were protected quickly find out they're victims. In the case of the Smerdells, it turns out that wall wasn't even meant to protect them from high water. Painesville City Manager Rita McMahon says the Smerdells live near the exit of the river where the ice often jams in spring.
Well, that wall was built by the private property owner as actually a flood protection from ice dams. It wasn't intended to protect the property from this type of a flood. This was a volume flood that came from the south to the north. It was just a wall of water, so to speak.
The Smerdells condo community was built in the 100-year floodplain 30 years ago. Back then, there weren't regulations on building in a flood-prone area. Today, new buildings have to be elevated. That's better protection than a wall, but flood walls and levee protection give people a sense of security. Often, they don't think about that protection failing them and the consequences of what that failure will mean to their homes and families. Engineers say it is possible to live safely by the water, but homeowners have to do their own investigating to find out the safety of housing elevations and flood walls. We spoke with Carl Maranka, a structural engineer with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers.
When you look at Katrina, when you look at the Mississippi floods in '93, and when we look up here, do you think that sometimes flood walls, even those built by the Army Corps, provide a false sense of security?
I don't know if it's a false sense of security. I think with the design and the assumptions that I'm familiar with, the factors of safety that those structures are built at, and good maintenance, I think that's a big issue. They have to be maintained. They cannot be allowed to fall into disrepair.
When the Army Corps builds a flood wall, Maranka says it's usually up to the local community to maintain it. But the local governments often don't have enough money to pay for that maintenance. Donna Smerdell doesn't trust any of it anymore.
I mean, even if they bulldozed it, and what kind of retaining wall would they build next? If this didn't work, and we all believed it would work, what do you build next?
All those other people flooded out of their homes will also have to decide whether they trust flood prevention technology and if living by the beautiful scenery is worth the threat of floods. For the GLRC, I'm Julie Grant.
In the forecast for East Central Illinois today, mostly cloudy skies, a chance of a few passing showers and drizzle, a high of 72. Mostly cloudy tonight, a chance of a passing shower during the evening hours, and patchy fog forming overnight, a low around 60. And for tomorrow, mostly cloudy skies, the high 75, northwesterly winds at 7 to 14 miles per hour. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Tuesday, August 29th. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, the afternoon magazine, agricultural programming, as well as other helpful information at our website, wiol.uiuc.edu. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.